Big show for you here today. It is the Week 16 edition of the Fantasy Film Room. Nate Tice joins me for a packed show. We talk matchups we're stressed about in the semifinals, Chargers passing game versus the Cowboys. In the flip side, Cowboys wide receivers, specifically George Pickens against the Chargers DBs. We also talk about what are we doing with Jalen Waddle now that there's Quinn Ewers behind center. Big news on the day there. Then Nate gives us a preview of some prospects to watch in the college football playoffs and a big Thursday night preview. Then, finally, Joel Smith joins the show for this week's edition of Buzz is Building. Five very interesting players on all levels of the NFL field. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast presented by Toyota, the official automotive partner of the NFL, who's all in all season. And it is a hell of a day to talk ball. And join me to do just that is Nate Tice. Nate, what's going on, buddy?
I'm doing great. I'm hardwired. My yeah. Three-year-old son took my AirPods, and I didn't realize that till I opened up the case, came onto the show, but I'm doing great other than that. So you'll be seeing me fidgeting around a little bit as I give some good takes, though. I'm actually very excited for this subject because I have some relevant players for this subject today on top of the stuff we'll do at the end of the show with some college football playoffs. So very excited for today.
Perfect. Good. I'm glad you're jacked up for it. I'm jacked up for it, too. And I know the people are ready to hear about, yeah, as you think I'll tell the people what we're going to be doing on the show today. You situate that mess you've got going on over there. So this is what we have today. Like I said, it's a packed show.
I was so ready to rock. This is the most notes I've ever put in the doc, probably. I put stats this entire day. I was so geeked up. And then all of a sudden I opened up my AirPods and I was like, oh, you got to be kidding me.
You know, the joy of a child-free life over here is that everything is where I expect it to be at all times. But you know what? You're furthering the human race, and it's a joyful experience, and I'm proud of you for doing it, buddy. So congratulations and shout out to you. As for this show, what we're going to be doing today, we have a packed show that you guys are going to be very excited about. We're going to dive into the Fantasy Film Room. We're going to talk about matchups that we're stressed about in Week 16. Yes, these are some matchups that we are personally conflicted about. We're not sure which way they can go. We're going to try to figure that out together. We're going to hopefully give you guys some players that you can feel better or worse about for your fantasy matchups here in the semifinal week. Then Nate is going to give us a little college football playoff viewer's guide here, some prospects that you can watch. Because, yes, there's a lot of you. I mean, the vast majority, I would say 97.3%, according to the data that I just completely made up, of people that listen to this show are in their semifinal playoff matchups. But there is a small percentage of you that are eliminated. You know, you're looking towards the offseason. You're in your dynasty drafts. You want to get a little ahead. We're going to give you a little preview of that, just a little taste. And by we, I do mean Nate. He's going to do all the work, and I'm just going to sit here and let him cook for that. Then we're going to preview a big Thursday night football game between the Rams and the Seahawks. And then we'll say goodbye to Nate, and we'll bring in Joel for a little Buzz is Building. But before we do all that, we have some news to hit on today, and it's a pretty big one here. This morning, Tom Pelissero reported that Tua's time is up. The Dolphins are benching quarterback Tua Tagovailoa, and they're going to start rookie Quinn Ewers on Sunday, sources tell the insiders. Tua is due $54 million fully guaranteed in 2026. But his future in Miami is now clearly up in the air, as Pelissero put it. So, Nate, I think we've got two things to discuss here. One is, which is actually going to transition us nicely to our topic, you know, about matchups we're stressed about here, because I've got a Jalen Waddle team, and I'm a little stressed about this. What do we think about this offense in Week 16 and 17 with Ewers under center? And then also, what happens to the Miami Dolphins and Tua in the offseason? But let's unpack the immediate sort of fallout. Like, what is this offense going to look like with Quinn Ewers, who I've seen a lot of watching a lot of Texas wide receivers over the last few years? What's it going to look like with him under center?
Very similar, because even in the preseason, it was very similar offense. And Ewers is a better athlete than Tua, but I'm not saying much there. I'm saying a below average to more of an average athlete. Ewers has a quick throwing motion. He is kind of his highs are trick shots. Like, he has he can change his arm angle and everything, but that comes with lows because his accuracy can kind of be all over the place. I would say that the Dolphins coaches maybe preferred him in this draft class that had a lot in the middle. Like, he was part of, I did not prefer Ewers. I had a day three grade on him. I thought actually he went kind of where he should go, maybe sixth, seventh round. But that was this quarterback class. It was really eye of the beholder. I thought it was interesting that the Dolphins kind of picked him out of the litter because it probably could be a quick throwing style, which would match what this offense wants to do. They're not going to change much. No matter who the backup has been, even last year when Tua missed a few weeks, the offense stayed the exact same. I was curious if it would change based on a different quarterback type. And they're like, no. I'm trying to remember who the quarterback was. It was a more athletic quarterback that could run. And it was Tyler just like, Huntley. Nope. Yeah, it was Huntley. And it was like, no, we're just going to keep doing the same play action stuff. A bunch of quick hitters over the middle. So I think it's going to be more of the same with yours. It is more of an interesting long-term discussion, though. Because I think anyone paying attention to Dolphins is they have been more competitive until this recent egg that they laid on national TV. And I think it was, but it, you could tell most of the focus, even our discussion of it, was the run game has been much better. The run game has been much more interesting as opposed to the passing game, which has been, you know, some waddle, some interesting tight end stuff, more the design than, you know, the execution with Tua, which has been for a long time. You know, now it's kind of caught up, but this is kind of how he's been for a few years since they've been that crazy offense for when McDaniel first got there. So I just really think that the offseason discussions can be just so, so interesting. Teams have shown that they're willing to swallow big cap hits, but I'm just curious what they, what resources they throw at, what is a weak quarterback class, what vet, if there's a vet they go after, is it the Mac Jones market? Like that is just more interesting. Or if they just, if this is a reset. I don't think it's a reset. I think it's a like, no, this is finally, this is where the paths split between whatever this Dolphins team was and Tua.
Yeah. And obviously, we don't know.
God, that's great. Oh my God, that's great. Sure. Yes.
Yeah, this is kind of the thing.
Kind of though,
right? For the listening audience, if you're not watching along with us on YouTube, we're showing a meme on the screen where it's like it's the he ain't do nothing but step back. It's the before and after here. The Dolphins offense going from Tua to Quinn Ewers, which is probably the case here. And let's live in that world for a second. Like what it's going to look like for the immediate proceedings here, rather than what it looks like in the offseason, because I think it's also fair to note when we're talking about, hey, the Dolphins have looked better of late. The three games they played before the Pittsburgh Steelers was against the Commanders, the Saints, and the Jets. You know, that's obviously part of the context here. But the run game still did look good in spurts against the Steelers on Monday Night Football. The problem is just they were immediately scripted out of that thing. And the passing game, I said this on the show yesterday, I can't think of a bigger box score lie than Tua's box score at the end of that game. He had the ninth best passer rating among quarterbacks in week 15. He completed 78.6% of his passes, 9 yards per attempt. I mean, fib. I mean, you're grounded for a week if you're lying to your parents like that, all right? So, like, it was a really rough outing for the passing game in particular. The interception was bad. The sacks taken were bad. And I think Quinn Ewers is very capable of taking bad sacks and, you know, throwing up ducks too. That being said, it's a really soft matchup here in week 16. The problem is if you have Jalen Waddle on your fantasy teams, as like I said, I do, the trend against the Cincinnati Bengals has been your tight ends and your pass catching running backs can get home. But your number one receiver typically gets taken away by DJ Turner. And if I'm the Miami Dolphins and Quinn Ewers' first start, and you mentioned like Ewers is a guy at Texas, a lot of RPOs, quick hitters, one read, get it out stuff. I'm going to be making the one read to Darren Waller over the middle of the field against some of these linebackers and safeties on quick play action stuff. And if it's not there, you're dumping it down to Devon Achane in the flat. So I hate to fearmonger right off the top, especially because, like I said, I need a big Jalen Waddle game. I am just certainly concerned that he is going to come in lower ranked for me than he usually would without Tua in the proceedings. Makes it a little more tough here, too.
And I think that's fair. And I also think that the Bengals defense has been slightly better as of late. They just haven't been an absolute abomination. I'm not saying good, just slightly better. Not a total joke. Like guys like Joseph Asai have played better. Their linebackers are atrocious. And that's what you're speaking to with the running backs, tight ends, young quarterbacks' best friends is stuff that's over the middle right in front of them. Whether it be checkdowns, whether it be just quick hitters, they're going to run the same RPOs and that they've run with Tua. And I would say that Ewers' deep ball is it's interesting. Like he's like an Ephus pitch thrower. Like I don't know how to describe him. Like if no one has watched Quinn Ewers, who played at Texas, was the highest paid guy, like the first guy to make $1 million NIL. But it's he will throw a deep ball like a true rainbow. Like that thing will touch the roof at Jerry World and it would come back down. And that could just be interesting because that's not Tua who just refuses to throw deep. I mean, even Troy Aikman was outright just like laughing at it. And I think that just always has been that. Yeah. So I know Troy was in week, whatever it was, 15
form. I love Troy. Yeah.
I love it. Was perfect. No one has gone. Joe Buck too, I guess. Those two have gone the biggest 180 for me. Guys I was kind of annoyed with but earlier on in their careers, and now I love them, probably my favorites. Mm-hmm. But I think that's maybe what it is that's going to be a lot of deep balls and quick hitters. And so that might be interesting with Waddle, but I think too that I agree with you that it might be more boom bust as opposed to like the main diet of the offense. I can picture a lot of crossers and a lot of flats and stuff, just quick. And so I lean more to Darren Waller than I would to Jalen Waddle as the guy that would boom this week.
Yeah, you're this is going to come up a lot with some of these wide receiver matchups we're going to talk about. You're really hoping for like one big play with Jalen Waddle.
Yeah.
And that obviously I think you have to account for when you're making some of your lineup decisions and stuff like that is you're really hoping for one big play. Again, the problem is just wide receiver ones against this team just haven't made a lot of big plays because DJ Turner has been so good for the Bengals this season. He's been one of their bigger bright spots, and that's just been the trend of this whole season for the Cincinnati Bengals defense. Just quickly, to kind of piggyback on some of the stuff you were saying about the offseason for Miami, the biggest question comes down to, like, are they retaining McDaniel or not? I think I've seen enough in the back half of the year to say I might at least give it one more year with Mike McDaniel and Anthony Weaver. It's always messy when you get on these weird timelines, right? Because they're going to be bringing in a new GM first time for a while. They'll have a fresh voice in the front office, and you're keeping the old coaching staff, but you might make a big quarterback decision. You know, the Bears and the Giants are often in this cycle of we're never on the same page, front office and head coach, and we see how that's gone. So it's definitely a tricky thing. I actually wouldn't really fault them either way, whichever decision they want to make on McDaniel, who I could see it either way, really. But that's really what it comes down to me. I don't think that anyone would want to come in here and tie themselves to Tua at this point. And I certainly think, obviously, McDaniel has shown us he does not want to do that either.
No, I think Tua is going to enter into the cycle of maybe of a Darnold or and not saying like, you know, he'll have the second career resurgence, but I'm saying more high end backup spot starter, that kind of, which I mean, if you look around the league, it might be needed this season because of just how it's all breaking down. Kyler might be available as well. You know, that's another interesting name that I'm very curious what happened. Anthony Richardson, the Daniel Jones stuff with the Colts. It's just the quarterback carousel this offseason is going to be different. It's just as far as like the mid tier vets are going to be the prettiest people at the dance. You know, like they are going to be the ones that I think everyone's going to kind of aim for. So that's why I'm curious what happens with Tua. Like if someone's desperate enough and goes like, well, he started games, you know, like you're so like once the seats are getting filled up and once the evals happen with this draft, I think that's going to be a part of it. But I think what I would have said, I agree with you, is that like I can make the argument that, hey, what McDaniel's done and has shown over the years at times is absolutely like truly brilliant as a play designer. And I would want to see him with a shot with what I consider a better quarterback, a guy with a higher ceiling, even if it is Mac Jones, like, you know, a guy that I do consider at least playing better with more confidence than Tua has shown recently. Like, I would like to see that. But I would also understand, like you just mentioned, the Bears, Giants, pratfalls they've made recently, where it's just like, okay, we're not aligned always. Well, okay, well, now we have a quarterback this year with the GM that didn't draft him, with a head coach that didn't want him, and yada, yada, yada. Maybe that would be the reset. We already fired the GM and reset everybody. So I understand either. I personally would keep McDaniel because everybody wants the offense play caller head coach. I don't always agree with that. Yeah. But like these guys don't really grow on trees. And he has shown maybe with a better locker room, a locker room that he truly has ownership over, and maybe just a full deep breath with this whole roster, maybe give him a shot there. But that you never know in this NFL, man. Everybody's timelines are so different from organization to organization. Every owner acts so differently, too.
Yeah, and there's not a lot of, like, super attractive, obvious, this is the next Liam Cohen, Ben Johnson type in this cycle right now. So that might lead to McDaniel staying. But, yeah, you mentioned the word ownership. That was going to be what I closed this on was, you know, the thing with Tua, you mentioned, like, he might have that moment this offseason, even where someone's like, oh, he started games in the NFL. You know, you can sell Tua. And that's what it comes back to you know, talking about today, like the contract with Tua and how bad that contract is. This just comes down to, I wrote this years ago for Yahoo when I think it was in the fallout of the Jared Goff extension with the Rams, which is funny because obviously Goff has proven himself to be way better than this type of player. And yet the Rams did eventually move off of him because they felt that they were stuck in quarterback purgatory. But they first gave him that extension. And my whole point in that article was that almost no team walks willingly into the quarterback wilderness and leaves the comfort of the faux comfort, the fake comfort of quarterback purgatory. Almost no one wants to do it. They will sell themselves because we can do these little thought experiments on the internet. Well, what if they just cycle rookie after rookie after rookie every year? Or what if they just spend a year with Jameis Winston as a starter? No owner is going to be like, good idea, boys. Let's sell some freaking tickets, baby. Nobody's going to do that. No one's going to do it. Nope. So it's cute little stuff you can kick around on football Twitter, but it's never going to happen in the real world here. And that is why Tua got that contract and why he will be a you know, maybe an attractive candidate to somebody, because at least you can tell yourself a story. Shoot, we do this as analysts all the time. Like, I could tell myself a story about how this, that, and the other happens, and then it doesn't happen because it was never baked really in reality.
They're called outliers for a reason. You know, that's the thing is I mean, it's human nature. I'm guilty of it sometimes too. Like, whoa, worked with, you know, Dak, you know, fourth rounder, you know, like Russell Wilson, third rounder. But then it's also like, then there's Desmond Ridder and Sam Howell, you know, and you know, just every example, there's every type of example, good and bad. So I know I've been trying to figure out where they're going to go. They've been the most confusing team to me because it looked like after a month, they were one of the most embarrassing performances of an organization I had seen, what they put on field on the field. But I thought they also became one of the more encouraging teams over this last month until, you know, this again, this egg that they laid. So they're fascinating to me. There's talent on this roster. That's what's so interesting to me. And I they're not too far away, but they really have to answer what they're going to do with Tua and who's going to be next. I'm hedging on Mac Jones. I still maintain that. I don't know why, but that's just the name. If McDaniel's still there, that's the one that just makes the most sense to me.
There's system connectivity there. You know, there's a relationship with San Francisco. He's on another year of the contract there with San Francisco. So it could be one that happens. But you mentioned there's talent. There's talent on this team. We're going to see them play out the rest of the string in some of these week 16 and 17 matchups. So with that, let's transition. Let's dive into this week's Fantasy Film Room. Welcome to the Fantasy Film Room presented by Toyota, the official automotive partner of the NFL, who's all in all season with another year of Toyota game day giveaways. From NFL shop gear to even Brock Purdy's favorite Sequoia, Toyota is giving fans a chance to win big. Visit toyota.com/NFL to learn more. So as mentioned, we already started talking about it with the Jalen Waddle matchup that has me stressed. We're going to talk about some matchups here we're stressed about in week 16. Essentially, these are guys we're nervous about given what they're going against here in week 16. But we would hate to see these players erupt on our benches. And that is something I talk about a lot. Like, what's a decision that you can live with making? We'll bring that up certainly throughout the course of this conversation. But Nate, I'm going to throw it to you first. What's a matchup that you're a little stressed about this week?
I don't know if it's a stress, but it's more of an interesting split I have. But it's more like if you have Jameson Williams on your team, and that has been one of those kind of Jekyll and Hyde performers. He's been, I mean, had some blow up games recently, of course, but going against the Steelers defense is more of an interesting split where if you have a decision, and I know Jameson Williams has almost earned to like an auto start status, but say you're into that one of those where you do have a roster that is just like, I don't know if I do prefer this guy or not. I'm just saying, I do say that Amon-Ra St. Brown is a smash this week, and Jameson Williams is more of a, if you get disappointed, didn't tell you so. How about that? That maybe that's the best way I can put this, because it's hard to say bench Jameson Williams in a semifinal or a very important game. But I just want to say Steelers defense, they moved Jalen Ramsey to deep safety. He's a guy, I wrote about this recently, but the Steelers defense went from a bottom eight, bottom 10 pass defense to a top 10 one since he moved to safety and James Pierre moved to outside corner. They were ninth in passing success rate, eighth in EPA per pass allowed since week 9. So we're getting into a good sample size now. But it's interesting, their splits. He has kind of put a nice cap on the defense. It's made him safer. It's made Pierre being on the outside has made him better against outside receivers. They're seventh in EPA versus receiver targets to the outside. James Pierre is first in yards per target allowed, 4.6, and second in success rate allowed among all NFL cornerbacks. He was injured last week against Miami. Asante Samuel Jr., I believe, played instead, but he's been playing very well. And against slot targets, they're 24th in EPA against slot targets. So it's a clear split of what they have. Also, how they play defense, where they will let stuff happen in the seams, makes more sense. It just seems like more of a big Amon-Ra St. Brown week and more of a maybe average-ish Jameson Williams week. And so I'm just saying, in the semifinal, maybe there should just be a little more fear with Williams than maybe maybe you'd first suspect, who's just been kind of blown up maybe the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, just to put the point on how much he's been blowing up over the last few weeks. In the first 9 weeks of the season, Jameson Williams was wide receiver 41 in fantasy points. He was now on the season, just because of what he's done since week 10. He is a top 10 receiver in half PPR points. Like that, that is how crazy he's been. And that's with a zero catch game in week 12. That is including that performance.
That's insane.
That's just how insane it's been. But to that point, that zero catch game did happen. You can't be like, oh my God, Jameson Williams busted for me in week 16. How did that happen? Like, we've seen a proof of concept.
That's
there.
Kind of what and I was. That's my overarching point. It's like, it's more scary than you would first suspect going against the Steelers defense that you think is pretty gettable.
And in that game, he had 3 targets, and at least according to PFF, he dropped 2 of them, you know, which is, I mean, that's going to happen sometimes too. I think it would be unlikely that he has a 3 target game, but to your point, like, this is a defense that I did not like at all in the early part of the season, and you know it was on my radar, but I think Mike Tomlin and those guys have done a good job sort of changing things around. They've brought in new players. They've adjusted personnel, like taking Ramsey, who was just, in my opinion, getting fried at corner in the first part of the season, and making him more of that safety. It's probably earlier than he might have wanted to make that transition in his career, but it's a long hypothesized move for him, and it's finally happened. I think it's made this defense better. And so, it definitely makes Jameson Williams, I would say, a riskier play this week. The thing is, and it comes back to the thing I said about Waddle, he can make one big play that makes this entire point moot, you know?
Yes. It's more one of these where you would think it's a high floor play, but it's more boom busty than you would think. And I think that's kind of like why. And because I have Jameson Williams on some teams. I have Amon-Ra St. Brown on some teams. So it's just been one of those where I do have one league where it's like Jameson Williams more as a flex candidate for me. And I'm actually leaning other ways. And even if it's a one that you wouldn't suspect as like someone who I bench it for, it's kind of a buyer beware, caveat emptor kind of play this week. Just even look at James Pierre, he's been like a nice, steady player for the Steelers team. I saw that eye test, but then as I looked more in the stats, you got Joey Porter Jr. on one side, Pierre on the other side. Again, he did miss last week, but I think he'll come back. And then now Jalen Ramsey shoring it up. He's only allowed 13 catches on 34 targets as the nearest defender. He has 11, he's almost has as many PBUs as catches allowed. He has 11 PBUs. 13 catches. He's only allowed a 38.2% completion rate. Like, so all the, like, he is playing basically what Quinion Mitchell has been playing, because I have a Quinion Mitchell point coming up. But he has just been standing out as well, on top of, you know, Jalen Ramsey doing a lot. I think it's more of a run game. You saw what the Bills did to this team, but also just because of game script. And that's actually what you can still get the Steelers defense. Ramsey's helped out the passing defense a lot, but the run game's still kind of gameable and gettable. And even if the Lions run offense has dropped off a little bit, still I think you can pop some plays against them.
Real quick before we move off of the Jameson Williams thing, just because this is an area of curiosity for me, you kind of get to pick your narrative with Jameson Williams having this bounce back from week 10 on, because in week 10 is when Dan Campbell took over the play calling.
Right.
It's also the game in which Sam Laporta got hurt. And like, this passing game has just become very super concentrated right now. They basically just go to those two wide receivers and Jahmyr Gibbs in the passing game, and that's it. Like, all the other tight ends are banged up too. So, because for me, at first I'm like, oh yeah, Dan Campbell took over the play calling and he's just using Jameson Williams in different ways. The more I've looked into it, like, they didn't have him running more go routes than usual under John Morton. They didn't really have him like that. That hasn't really changed. They're getting him some more screens now, but like, is that part of the fact that St. Brown has been hurt? You know, he was that was a big thing in weeks 13 and week 14, because St. Brown got hurt and he wasn't supposed to really play in that week 14 game. Is that part of it too? So what do you actually just, or is it just randomness, or do you attribute it to either one of those variables here?
a couple easier matchups if I just top off my head, like thinking that. But also, Laporta, as good he is as a receiver, he is a weak blocker. And they have done, the Lions have done a really good job. And I actually, this is where Ben Johnson first stood out to me, whereas how they kind of mitigated that as far as like hiding him and using him in creative ways. And I was like, oh, that's cool. Like, you, I thought this would be a weakness for you guys. So him coming off and maybe using Tesla, for some reason, I just have to emphasize his name like that. But it just, it's what allowed them to kind of be more bullish, I guess, in some ways, open up Jameson Williams from doing any of that. To me, because a lot of Jameson Williams' big plays have been stuff that is where he is off ball, able to go in motion and then work across. And I think maybe it's like, I'm not saying he's a slot, but maybe more Z-ish.
No.
Some ways.
Z receiver. And you because, should be.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what, yeah, exactly. He's not true X and all that. But it's, and I think just maybe just because of that personnel usage, and I have not looked at if they've gone to more 11 over the last couple of weeks. I would assume they have. But maybe because I know Khalif Raymond's been banged up as well. But I maybe just think of that off the top of my head. But that's how they tie it in a little bit more, is because of those receiver looks, which opens up Jameson Williams from being a little bit more, as opposed to if they went to 12, 21. Jameson Williams doesn't get used on those kind of juicy targets. Laporta does, you know, those overs, the stuff working over the middle. Again, this is just more theory and just eye test, because that's just off the top of my head what I can remember Jameson Williams going off on. And also,
yeah,
when the game's against the Rams, like, it was just like, oh, it was just perfect design using Williams' speed, you know, like one of the touchdowns and everything.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of everything, but I was just curious what your perspective was, because that's something that I don't have like a firm answer on. And like I said, you can kind of pick your narrative either
way. Now I kind of want to look.
But yeah, it's something that I kind of want to do a deeper dive here in the next few weeks as well. So maybe we can do that and we can compare notes there, because I think he's a really, really good player. And I think that I do think Dan Campbell has a better feel for Jameson Williams than John Morton did. And Dan Campbell even kind of said that when he first took the play call. He said, I have a better feel for our players, or I have a really good feel for our players. And that was the guy that first came to mind for me. And it took Ben Johnson a little bit to figure that out too. So long story short, I do think Jameson Williams probably a boom bust player in week 16, but definitely interesting. And I would like to do that deep dive at some point. I probably will do that here.
I have an easy stat to look at right here, which would just kind of make sense to what I was saying. So snaps with two or fewer receivers after week 8, week 9. So when he take over play calling duty, week 10
against the Commanders.
Week 10. I should just even say that. Boom. I could look at it right here on True Media. So I have a stat. Like I invented it. Two or fewer receivers. On all snaps, they've only been a quarter of their snaps. 24.7 have been two or fewer receivers. So that means they've been in 11 personnel or even 10 or whatever, instead of that, since week 10. So that just kind of speaks to what kind of my theory. I think it's just that his role is opened up because Tesla's taken the Laporta stuff. And if I'm Jared Goff, I'm not, you know, I'm going to target Laporta more than Tesla. No offense to Tesla, but just more just kind of some of the role when they are kind of like in more condensed formations that they like to be in. Because before that, they were in two or fewer receivers, 70% some of these games, 55% some of these games, you know. So I'm trying to just click real quick. So before he took over play calling duty, or before Laporta got hurt and play call duty, all that, it was 50%. So it's cut in half. That they went from 12, 21, all that. Yep. Sorry, just 13, all no, that I good think, stuff. Sorry. Yeah. But now you like open up a thread for me to pull at, because now I'm like, oh, actually, yeah, no, I haven't really thought about that, because it's just the routes Jameson Williams catching. It's not just go. It's a lot of movement routes.
Crossing.
Like, yeah, crossing. Runaway. It's a runaway routes. You know, like, yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
it's definitely a good one. And one I think will hopefully, I mean, Lions might not make the playoffs, so this might all be a short talking point here in the next 2 weeks. So we'll see. Another team who's not going to make the playoffs is the Dallas Cowboys. I want to talk about, actually, before I'm going to come back to their wide receivers in that same game. But first, I want to talk about Chargers passing game versus the Cowboys pass defense here, because this should be a very exploitable matchup for Justin Herbert, for the Chargers wide receivers. And yet, my God, it has been painful to watch this team for a long time now, but the last 2 weeks it's been brutal. I can't believe that Justin Herbert took more hits in this game against Kansas City than he took against the Eagles the week prior, because he was getting blasted left and right against the Eagles. And yet it is true, he took more hits in the game against Kansas City than he did against the Eagles the week prior. no Quentin Johnson in this game. So we got to get a look at like Keandre Lambert Smith and Trey Harris, which I thought both those guys flashed in that game. Yeah. But still, it just also kind of makes the whole passing game spread out, which is tough, obviously, for Ladd McConkey, who's not gotten the targets that you want from him. He's not a player that I think you can auto start. Keenan Allen also doesn't see any bump and roll. He's just kind of a slot only matriculate the ball down the field on third down, stuff like that. But again, this is a very exploitable pass defense, Nate. So is where are we at with this Chargers passing game that is going to project well against Dallas, but I just have no faith that I can see a good performance out of this passing game that lifts up multiple boats here. Do you have any different take in this particular game?
I wish I could tell you, because it's just a movable force, you know, against a stoppable object, especially with the fronts, because now Quinnen Williams is hurt. That is, you know, that change. If he was playing, then I'd actually be like, wow. Even if so, the Cowboys have allowed the most EPA to receiver targets this entire year. They've allowed 119.14 EPA to receiver targets this year. The league average is 51.8. So over double the league average. So that's where I would just be like, oh yeah, they're going to go bonanza. Yeah, you know, they're going to go nuts. But they're going to get pressure, because just you got to think of the strength of the Cowboys defense, like Oso Odigizua, like an interior pressure. But I also just think that Herbert can get the ball out quickly enough. And also because they kind of know that and how they like to play. It's a lot more simple zone. This is the stuff that Herbert kind of shreds. So I actually think in this matchup, it's actually a good matchup, even if their O line is weak. It's just kind of one of those things. It's hard to predict, because I think the Chargers can kind of have your way against this Cowboys defense. Yeah. the run game, well, at least they were stifling a little bit, but then even the Vikings were kind of moving them when Quinnen was out there, because the linebackers are just iffy. And just so bad, because that's where, you know, Gadsden becomes viable. But I just think this is kind of still an all systems go, like still of a juicy matchup, because I just don't think it's that there's not that one dude I'm too worried about. If it's you're going against a say just Micah Parsons was on this defense right now, a healthy Micah Parsons, then I'd be like, oh, OK, well, he's going to wreck your game. That I don't see how they're going to block that up. But, you know, as you know, they have some edge juice, but I don't think it's overwhelming enough to totally take away the game from the Chargers having some offense on this. And if everybody's be able to get this defense, and I think the Chargers are going to be accepted from that.
And, you know, it certainly would benefit a guy like McConkey, that quicker game stuff. We've seen that in the past. You know, it's just really tough to trust right now. But your notes on like the most EPA allowed to wide receivers is certainly helpful, and it's instructive here. And I think Herbert's a guy that I do have a Herbert team that I'm personally struggling with, like what to do with him versus, you know, CJ Stroud, who I picked up off the waiver wire and stuff like that, him versus the Raiders. So those are the things I'm definitely personally stressing about. For the most part, I think those are the only two guys you're kind of worried about. I think if you're playing anybody other than Ladd McConkey in the receiver room, you're getting too cute about it. I think Arondé Gadsden, like there are better options at tight end, but it really comes down to, can you rank Herbert as a top 12 quarterback? I don't think so, but I think you can rank him as a high end QB2. And then if you don't have a better option, you can go with him. And then McConkey, I'll still probably have in this very same range of guys like Jaylen Waddle, guys like Jameson Williams, where you're counting on those big plays, you know, the big in breaking routes, big out breaking routes, the sail routes off play action and stuff that Ladd McConkey is really good at. That I just got, you're counting on a couple of those hitting here for him to get home for you, because otherwise, like we've seen, that the floor is very, very low when the offensive line for that team just gets completely dominated.
Maybe it's wishful thinking, but I think Ladd is the guy that'll benefit the most, because I think it's the outside corner play you can really attack this defense. Ladd does both for them. Keenan Allen's primarily a slot and a third down guy. And then, you know, Quentin Johnson, it's more just movement stuff that works over the middle. And I think that I almost think of him as more, he's his own thing. He's just like his usage that he's the type of guy that's just like kind of like, okay, designer plays, I think maybe is the best way to put it. So I think maybe the flow of the offense, I can see like a lot of curl routes, like a lot of those like 15, 16 yarders where he's working from the outside and coming back. Like I see a lot of those soft spots, like deep outbreakers and stuff. I think it's more of a Ladd game than any of the other receivers too. So I'm trying to almost talk you on the ledge a little bit if you are just a lad.
I'm really off.
I know, I can see. Yeah, so I'm trying to go like actually it's not too bad. I don't know, I'm trying to talk you into it a little bit because I don't know, this Cowboys defense is just atrocious. I was feeling a little bit better about some parts of it, but it's like it's just because it's so simplistic on the back end. Yeah. So it's, they don't have talent, and on top of it, you know what you're getting, and now you're going against the Terminator, Herbert, who is extremely smart, and if you're not funking it up on him, he's just going to and get the ball out, so who cares about the O-line stuff? Yeah. So that's kind of where I just think it's one of those where it's like, it's good enough against this type of defense.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Okay, that makes that.
If I'm wrong, I'm sorry. I have no lad stock in this week. So
me neither. It's mostly a Herbert question for me. But I think lad needs to happen for Herbert to happen. So that's why it's like kind of stressful for me. So
yeah,
no, that's good to hear. Let's get to your second one here because this is one you teased earlier. Yeah. Scary Terry versus Quinyon Mitchell here.
This is just man, Marcus Mariota has been a pretty solid performer, you know, when he's been the quarterback now for Washington. Like, the offense has been able to stay somewhat on track. I keep hyping up the run game. Rodriguez gets hurt, and then freaking Bill gets back in there and has a big week. They're just like, the run game has been steady, but Scary Terry has just been still a nice tight window performer. It just helps the offense because he's an easy button type of receiver, a guy that can win vertically and can win on contested catches. But he's going against, I would just picture how the Eagles defense, which the Eagles have to be, you know, game, like they're not trying to give any of these away. Cooper DeJean and Quinyon Mitchell have been all pro level players. Cooper DeJean plays primarily in the slot, which Debo, you know, I'm kind of, well, if even though Debo's been doing more than that. But I think Quinyon Mitchell has been a first team all pro corner this year. Whether you look at yards, whether you look at completion percentage, whether you look at eye test success rate, all these stats point to him being on the podium for one of the best corners this year. And it's just like, it just confirmed. And how they play is they will allow him to travel with the first receiver, which is clearly Terry in this type of offense on its attack vertically. So he's one, because I know Scary Terry is not going to be like your receiver one or anything of that sort. But a guy that if you have decisions, I would fade him this week because it's not the best matchup. I would prefer the run game against the Eagles. And I would prefer the Commanders run game against the Eagles as opposed to one of the receivers as a guy that I would really kind of like hang my hat on this week.
Yeah, and that makes sense. Like, you've already kind of seen that the last couple weeks where Terry McLaurin against this Giants team, because he is it's more of the single high coverage man stuff on the outside. He's going to have that big play, as he did against the Giants last week, where he has the long touchdown catch. But then the game against the Vikings, you know, not as much, right? Yeah. Where he has the slower game there, because that's just less of the type of stylistic defense that Terry McLaurin typically pops off.
It's all
against.
Cover two stuff, so it's that cover two takes away vertical receivers. So like that makes a ton of sense.
Yeah, six targets, three catches, 41 yards, no touchdowns, and then the next game, four targets, three catches, 69 yards, the touchdown. So really, it's with Terry, is he going to make that big play or not? The game against Denver obviously is the outlier. He has the 14 targets despite playing a part-time role, and he was just taking it to Patrick Surtain, which maybe if you want to tell yourself the story here, that Quinyon, you know, he gets
hey,
got here.
Get to that first-team All-Pro. Let's stay on this year's first-team All-Pro.
But Surtain was coming back from like a peck injury, probably came back pretty early from it. You know, you never know with all that. So I definitely think I'm with you there that with Terry, he's very, like, he might be more boom bust than any of the guys we've talked about here so far. Where the other thing that's worth noting, though, is that if Terry gets any work against any of the other outside corners, particularly when they've used play action, they've really been able to sting those perimeter corners, not named Quinyon Mitchell, on play action dropbacks. And Marcus Mariota actually has a higher play action rate than Jaden Daniels does this year. So they kind of use more of that with Marcus Mariota. So that would be your one hope, that path to that big play. Cause I agree, right now I'd give that edge in the matchup to Quinyon Mitchell there. So that's definitely one to watch. I'm going to stick in the NFC East for my next one here. Cowboys wide receivers versus the Chargers defensive backs, specifically George Pickens. George Pickens is kind of reverted back to the old, you know, boom bust version of George Pickens. There's been the talk about the effort and all that. I will say, watching the Vikings game back, I didn't see him like loafing around or any of that stuff out there. I don't think that was the cause of it. The thing for me that I did see, though, was a lot of plays where they just zoned it up on that side of the field to George Pickens. They throw an extra, you know, kind of umbrella coverage on that side of it. It's like they drop a corner back. They have a flat defender there. And because Pickens, and this happens a lot of with these guys who are just static X receivers, and he is a great static X receiver, but when you can chaos up the game plan and you're going to throw a lot of those zones out there, you can just get stuck and you can get out of the game plan. And that felt a lot of what happened with George Pickens in that game last week to me. And I just wonder if we're going to see the exact same thing this week, because the Chargers are, I think, one of, if not the best defense in zone coverage this season. Their defensive backs are awesome. They allow the fewest points per drop back from a fantasy standpoint in zone coverage, according to fantasy points data. And when you just look at George Pickens, I did this split by the games where CeeDee Lamb played. So weeks 1-2 and then 7-15 against man coverage, George Pickens 2.9, which is a great number. Weeks 3-6 without CeeDee Lamb, 3.75. So both like awesome numbers. Now, George Pickens yards per route run versus zone coverage, again, weeks 1-2 and then 7-15. So this is mostly with CeeDee Lamb. 1.85, not terrible, but it's fine. Weeks 3-6, 3.01, like high end stuff. Anything over 3 is awesome, obviously. So I would say that the takeaway there is he is more vulnerable to losing production versus zone coverage when CeeDee Lamb is on the field, which makes sense, right? Because he's the slot flanker. He's going to get the layup targets, everything like that. So to me, I think that's the biggest issue for George in this game is you're going to see a ton of zone. He's that static X receiver. CeeDee Lamb's doing all the fun move around stuff. And especially with the Cowboys offensive line that is dealing with injuries, you know, we'll see who's out there on Sunday for this team, but they have been dealing with injuries previously. If they can get taken to work up front, you're going to see Dak in chaos again. And guess what? Like when your quarterback is in chaos, it's the Cortland Sutton, Bo Nix thing. When your quarterback's in chaos, that X receiver is not going to get a bunch of targets against zone coverage.
And also, it's not even just the zone coverage, it's the types of zones they get. Because you just mentioned, George Pickens is what? One of the true X's in the NFL. How high or low you rank him is just up to everybody. But one of the guys that gets treated like a true X, because he can beat just about anybody one-on-one vertically. He's one of the true guys that can win on stop routes, etc. I just mentioned in the last segment, cover 2 and cover 6, which are called cloud coverages. Those are the ones, you know, they feature cover 2 at least on one side. That's a way you take away a true X. And the Cowboys are, the offense is a merger of Schottenheimer stuff, some Clayton Adams run game stuff, and then what Dak likes, especially some of the formations they use. Well, we use George Pickens as an X. All right, well, if you're going to be in what they call 3-by-1 trip sets, okay, we'll just run cover 2, cloud to that side. The two teams that have faced the most cloud coverages this year are the Bengals and the Cowboys. So the Bengals have faced 200 dropbacks with cover 2 or cover 6, and the Cowboys have faced 160 dropbacks with cover 2 or cover 6. Makes sense, right? Probably the best duos in the game when they're all out there. I'm sure it's even more when they're both on the field, but I'm just kind of looking, you know, just eyeballing this. And then if you look, the Cowboys against when just their target share against cover 2 and cover 6, this is true media, CeeDee Lamb, highest target share. And then usually the tight end is the guy that feasts against cover 2 and cover 6. Guess who's second? Jake Ferguson. So, and guess who's third? Usually the other guy, that because it's over the middle. So we mentioned a slot, a tight end, the running back. Third, Javonte Williams are the three leaders in target share against cover 2 and cover 6. And that just, this is a perfect stat that matches exactly football philosophy and scheme. Like this is just perfect. I didn't know this going in, so it's kind of fun for me to share this. But it's George Pickens against cover 2, cover 6. 15% target share, 14.9%. 1.17 yards per route. CeeDee Lamb, 3 yards per route against cover 2, cover 6, 27% target share. So exactly what you were saying, but it's respect, but they have the guys that can eat it, that can beat it, Dak, Jake Ferguson, CeeDee, so they're just not going to try and do anything else. Well, okay, we'll just do this instead. Like It's good offense, but it's frustrating if you're a George Pickens owner. I understand. But going against the Chargers, you probably see more of it this week because that's what they do as well. So it's hard for this week.
No, that was awesome because that kind of confirms a little bit of what I think about some of the coverage data sometimes, is as opposed to, especially when you get granular into like cover two versus cover three, cover four, all that, like you're breaking out specific players. It almost matters more like what's your role on the team. Like you could basically Correct. Throw that Yep. analysis out there without anybody's name on it. And I think it would make complete sense. It just so Yep. happens that this Cowboys team, because Pickens is such a pure X receiver where he's just almost outside on Yeah. the line Yeah. and he's way out there sometimes,
Yep.
it makes it dramatic, like these splits and everything. Yes. So that makes complete sense to me. And yeah, definitely makes Pickens a guy that is, again, the same line that we're saying here, boom bust this week. I mean, and Yeah. like, because we're throwing out so many names that people have to start, like you're gonna start almost all of these Yeah. guys we're talking about here.
The
like,
show's basically the cold water show. It's basically, hey, sorry Yeah. to scare you guys show, but this is kind of what I've been looking at all week too.
Ray Garvin and I call it we're fear mongering, you know, which
yeah, we
doesn't
are.
Pay the bill. It doesn't pay the bills on YouTube or podcasts. That actually, we should do that on X. We should do it on Twitter over there. That's where if you fear monger over there, that's where you get, you pay the bills. But so I just think the thing is, like, these guys are also going to project pretty well. And Yeah. I think for Pickens, the saving grace here is that I do think this game could be high scoring. And in that case, like, he's going to have a shot at a touchdown here, you know, or something like that. So, I'm not going to bench George Pickens for, you know, Jaden Reed or something like that. It's just, again, he's still a starter, but you've just got to be ready to be like, all right, if he's volatile here, or Jalen Waddle's volatile here, James Williams volatile here, what am I doing,
Yes.
You know, to kind of make up for that? Real quick, last one we'll do here before we toss the break and get to the college football playoff one. I just want to talk about this Broncos-Jaguars game. We touched on it a little bit yesterday with Ray and I talking about the quarterbacks in that game, but we didn't really come to a good conclusion about the wide receiver versus Broncos defensive back matchup. Nate, sounds like you have a few notes you want to unload on that.
Just overall, this game is so interesting to me. Of course, Jakobi Meyers, the most interesting, most important player in the NFL. But going against this Broncos defense, which, of course, we've mentioned Patrick Surtain, they have clear splits against the types of receivers that they go against. And DVOA from FTN is a pretty good stat to kind of break it down. And for the Broncos, it kind of matches exactly how they play. They're fifth in against receiver ones in DVOA. They're 14th against receiver twos, 24th against receiver threes, 16th against tight ends, and first against running backs, which I think also aids to one of your points in this. But I, when watching this almost feels like, and it just feels like one of these games where it is a Jakobi Meyers, this is why you bring him in type of game. Again, against cover one and cover zero, since he has joined the Jaguars, Jakobi Meyers has a 31% target share. 8 first downs on 10 catches. And then BTJ has got 21% target share. Tutin is the other guy that they match up against man, but he's been banged up. Meyers also has, he can move into the slot at times too. And the Broncos defense is still like pretty good against the slot, but that is where it's most gettable. Whether they're blitzing, whether they're aggressive, whether they play man, whether they're zones. Against slot targets, they're 8th in success rate. So again, pretty good. But then they're 31st in air yards per attempt, 24th in EPA per pass. So it's more boom bust. Yeah. So
yeah,
Jakobi Meyers is interesting. I was going to just note that
they've given up a lot of like targets and air yards in the slot, but not a lot of production, which means teams are trying. It's just not always happening.
Because you don't want to target Patrick Surtain. And it makes sense. Again, this is one of these numbers match the eye test and the philosophy of football. I'm not going to target PS2. I'm not going to, you know, Riley Moss is much better than people realize. I'm not going to target him. All right, McMillan, I'm going to target you. Like, that's how kind of football works. It's a matchup league. So it's just one of these things. I just keep pounding away with the Broncos because it's such a good defense that it's like, these are the things that you have to harp on. It's their average against this as opposed to bad. It's because they're so good at everything else. But it makes sense too about how the Jaguars want to play. I see it being more of a, you know, running back target game, maybe a Brenton Strange target game because they'll run cover six on early downs and Strange gets a lot of targets against that. So it may be a Meyers Strange than a BTJ game, even though it's such an interesting matchup. These teams have a little bit of flaws on them, but they have so much excitement and so many cool players that really excited to watch this kind of in a real football sense too.
I agree. Really excited to watch this. I think the only two notes I would maybe counter you on there is one, you mentioned like the passes to running backs. Denver has given up the fewest catches to running backs this year, 38 on the season. And it's by a pretty significant.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, ETN, obviously they do a lot especially last week against the Jets. They did so much to put those linebackers in hell against ETN. But this is just a different beast, the Jets defense versus the Broncos defense.
Oh, yeah.
So obviously different beast there. But I like the Brenton Strange thing. The only thing I would say, Nate, is that if I'm Vance Joseph and I know everything that you just said about how important Jakobi Meyers is to this game, I think I'm having Pat Surtain track him around the field, and like I'll live with the Riley Moss BTJ volatility. You know, that's maybe what I would do if I was him.
The Raiders, when they played the Raiders, they had Patrick Surtain following Brock Bowers. So they'll show they don't care. If they think if you're, hey, this is, we treat these guys as ones, twos, and everything, but on a down and distance basis, they'll treat different guys because they play the numbers too. A lot of these numbers we share, they have variations of this as well that they look at as well.
Better ones, probably.
So the better, and just more stuff. this was our actual coverage call as opposed to some charting from an intern. You know, so I do think that that there's some of that as well, because I think they see, oh wow, every third down he's going here, every type of play action they're using him on these routes, him being Myers, I should say. So I totally agree with you. That's why the Packers could get to Jaden Reed is because they also have Romeo Doubs and Christian Watson. They have other guys they could target, and have success with as well.
All right. Hopefully we help some people out there. A lot of volatility, a lot of going to be boom and bust.
Boom bust.
Buckle up. Buckle up, folks. Week 16 is going to be a wild ride. That was my takeaway from that segment. We're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, Nate is going to give you some prospects to watch. And by you, I mean me, because I know maybe four of these humans exist on the list that he's got here. As we get into college football playoff season, we'll get into that right after this quick break. All right, we're back. And as promised, we're going to get into some college football stuff here, because this is Nate's last fantasy film room of the season, only because we go to our condensed holiday schedule for the next 2 weeks. We got Christmas, we got New Year's, we got the whole deal. So Nate won't be joining us in the fantasy film room the last. Yeah, I know. You know what? People love it. And I love it too. But Nate will not be joining us the last 2 weeks of the regular season. But don't worry. He's going to be instrumental in our draft coverage, not just on this show, but obviously over at Football 301. We're going to be doing a lot of draft stuff here, but Nate loves to be the early guy to the party. I actually don't know that about you, Nate. Are you a punctual person or are you not?
Yeah, I have. I got away from it, now back at it. I've become better at in my kind of elder statesman years, I've become much better at being punctual and everything. I feel like being on time is very important, showing respect.
That's good. Except I was, guess. and then I got married. So unfortunately,
that's true. I had to adapt around that. I did have to add about 30 minutes to everything. So that was something I had to adjust to.
Now, if I'm 5 minutes late, I'm feeling pretty good about it. But Nate likes to be early talking about these prospects. So that's what we're going to do here. Give us a little quick sneak peek at some of the top fantasy prospects in this year's college football playoffs, and just some prospects that you're interested in, Nate. And like I said, I'm going to let you cook here, buddy, because I don't know a damn thing about any of the prospects yet. I will not start that usually until January at the very earliest. And every year it gets a little bit earlier because I get excited. So especially about the wide receivers. But just talk to you first about any quarterbacks we're looking at here that people need to know in the college football playoffs as these things are getting started here.
Yeah, QB-wise, it's kind of neat in the sense that the guys that are probably the top prospects, I shouldn't say probably, I would say consensus and mine, are the guys that are in the college football playoff. So we have Fernando Mendoza, who just won the Heisman and just about every other award. I think what you're referring to about being first to the party, he's been my QB1 since last May, watching him at Cal.
Kind of, actually, wasn't thinking about that, but good point.
I thought that's what you're saying, it was kind of a projection of that. He's a very clean thrower, very, I think, a high floor prospect. He's a pro's pro. I think everyone that's watched interviews has kind of chuckled at how he presents himself.
Yeah.
But I think that's how he plays too. He always has answers. There's been a lot of comparisons to Jared Goff, which I totally understand. He's part of that archetype, has a little bit more athleticism. But I think it's somewhere, if you want to be high on him, super high, I would say Matt Ryan would be the high end projection for him. But just a clean operator, like, just understands how to play on third down, always finds answers, willing to push the ball. Should be fun to watch him on Indiana, which is a really well coached team and a very good team. They got a lot of talent overall. Dante Moore is the guy that's kind of like the, I wouldn't say the mystery man, but the guy that has the, maybe the most at risk in this playoffs. And I don't mean that in a bad way, because I think he's no, if he declared today, he's no matter what a top 20 pick. But I would say that if he goes nuts in this playoffs, and he has been ascending throughout the season, that he could overtake Mendoza as some teams QB1s. And I think there are a lot of people that maybe even have that right now. But he also might go back to school. That's still an option. I don't think he does, because I just think the money doesn't make sense to me. I think you can make more money over more years if you declare and be a top 10 pick. But those are the top two guys pretty unanimously. If you're just looking at this class, Lenoris Sellers went back to South Carolina. Don't agree with it, but he did. Ty Simpson, who's at Alabama, had a really nice first half of the season, has tapered off in the second half. I look at him more as a day two guy, and I think he should go back to school anyways. But he is a guy that, who knows, because they have talent on that team as far as at the quarterback position. I broke all this down with Dane Brugler as well, so he even had some more intel on this. So he's kind of a question mark as well. But Mendoza and Moore are the top two guys, my top two guys. I think the only guys that I would take in the top 10 in this class, even if they're the interesting guys, are all clear day two or day three guys to me. And so I just think that's really interesting to watch them starting this weekend with Oregon against James Madison, but then Mendoza gets a bye week and then on. I think there's going to be some cool performances from those two.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, I think Mendoza certainly looks interesting. Just some of the things I've heard about and I've seen the interviews too. So really excited to learn more about him. But either of these, like, do you think either of these guys are going to end up grading out better for you than like a Cam Ward, or, you know, Jackson Dart went in the first round last year? I don't think you kind of had him in that range, but are these guys like better prospects or kind of in that range?
I would say Mendoza and Ward are very similar how I have a grade, which is not a diss. I would say that is a kind of like a light medium blue for me. If you go my color coding system, which is a good first rounder, a guy that maybe if there's a true dude, maybe it would be QB2 in most classes. But in a class like this, yeah, you take him in the top 10. This is in any type of class. CJ Stroud was graded similar to that as well. So that is another guy recently that maybe he outperformed what I thought quickly. Now he's playing. I mean, I thought that maybe he could get to that week, year four, year five, but his rookie year was just incredible. And now he's playing really well again. But that kind of is the tier for me. Like a purple chip is the top. That's a guy that in any class is number one pick. That was Drake May for me. That was Caleb Williams for me. Trevor Lawrence was like that for me. Well, I think that this is kind of a next tier prospect. Moore is kind of just a tier below that to me, a half tier, I should say. He's a first rounder to me, a top 20 guy, but I still want to see a little bit more. I think he can be a little bit more aggressive, and I think but he has become better at that. So he could enter that kind of tier very quickly, I think, which is a couple good games. So I just needed to see it a couple more times. But these guys are true first rounders. They're not true reaches. Like Dart was a reach to me, has played well, but was a reach to me as far as a prospect. But these two guys are clear top 20 guys in any type of draft class.
Well, definitely something to watch with Dante Moore, because I like the way you put that. He has maybe not the most to lose, but the most to gain from these next few weeks here. What about running backs? And we could be a little quicker here, because if to my understanding, it's more of like guys who are not going to be in the playoffs that are interesting from a running back perspective.
Yeah. Jeremiah Love is the clear number one guy, might be a top 10 pick at running back. He is going to be the favorite to be number one in dynasty, number one in first round pick and redrafts next year. He's awesome. The people have thrown around Reggie Bush comparisons, which I would never, ever do. But that was just tell you about the caliber of player. I graded him higher than Ashton Gentry, if I'm being
okay.
And like he's more explosive. That's crazy to say about Gentry, but it's just Love is really a really cool player. His teammate might be running back too, by the way, at Notre Dame, Jadarian Prince. But the guys, at least, that are playing in the playoff, you got Noah Whittington from Oregon, and then Oregon and Indiana again. And then Roman Hemby and Kaylon Black from Indiana. These guys are more like round three at best. Round four is maybe where I'll have them graded at this point in time. But good backs, like I think can end up being like good running back twos, part of a rotation down the road. But those are the only guys to maybe keep an eye on for this kind of playoffs. Not really a running back. Most of the good running backs are underclassmen, talented. Like you'll see them down the road, but more underclassmen for this draft class. Just these guys.
Gotcha. And definitely for Jeremiah Love, I mean, let's just hope he goes to a team that's not completely disgusting.
Like the Raiders O-line.
My God. I mean, let's see a different situation for Gentry and see what happens, but it's the Raiders, so I don't know if we'll get to see that. But let's talk wide receivers here. Like, how excited should I be about this group?
much more excited than maybe I was in August. I'll say, okay, even running back wise, I got one more guy was Relique Brown from Arizona State. He declared today, actually, I put his name in on these notes, which is good. He's kind of a personal favorite. I think he's like a second rounder, but others were lower than him. But he's a guy to keep an eye on, by the way. But receiver wise, got guys in the tournament and also just outside the tournament. It's a really cool class. A lot of different flavors. Carnell Tate is probably the guy, at least in the playoffs for Ohio State. Jeremiah Smith is the underclassman who will be a top 10 pick next year's class or 2027. But Tate is going to be a top 15 guy, I think, in this year's class. Really good on the sidelines. Knows how to use his length. I really liked him in the summer. He was my receiver 2, I believe, in the summer. And now I have him battling for the receiver 1 spot as well. But he's risen up kind of everybody's boards. He's the guy to watch. He's really cool. Casey Concepcion for Texas A&M. Really fun. More than a gadget guy, but smaller guy. But he's got some real juice to him. Really cool player. A returner as well. Same with Georgia's Zachariah Branch. He transferred from USC. Really good athlete. A little smaller as well, but dynamic. Jeremy Bernard. So these guys, I would say Concepcion is getting some first round love. I consider him more of a round 2 guy. Same with Branch, more round 3. Bernard, late round 2, early round 3 right now. Bernard to me is like a perfect secondary guy. Does a lot of things well. He's going to be a guy that we both kind of like, but as far as maybe fantasy wise, has some cap to him. And then Indiana's got a couple cool day 2 receivers. Elijah Surratt wins on the outside, big body guy, wins on back shoulder throws, really fun player. And then Omar Cooper, really dynamic, more of a slot player, good ball skills, dynamic with the ball in his hands. But Indiana's got, again, it's not just like luck and outperforming like what they are with good coaching. They have like real talent. They have a lot more like round 3, round 4 guys on with Mendoza as well. But Surratt and Cooper, they might go in top 100. They're both pretty good receivers in their own rights and just they have different styles as well.
That's really interesting, man. I mean, that's like 6 names right there. And I know you've got 6 others that are not in the playoffs that are all couldn't help but list out. I mean, it sounds like what you're telling me here, Nate, is cancel all my plans from, I don't know, February to April. I will be busy charting wide receivers again.
There's no agreement on these either. So you're going to have some declarative statements. You're going to have to plant some flags. There's going to be so many people copying reception perception stats because they just want to use that. There's so many people who are going to be sharing those success rate graphs with the arrows pointing in because they're just going to be like, hey, see this guy? This is the guy. Yeah. And they're going to totally out of context.
I was going to say, I love when people speak for me and I have to be held accountable for this. Yeah. That's my favorite.
As someone that, I've seen some of my stats and takes aggregated sometimes. I'm like, no, not like that. But Denzel Boston's a guy, and no surprise to you, Matt, we've worked together enough. You know the type that I prefer. He's a true X. He's a vertical guy, 6'4", 215.
Just gonna look it
he
up.
Returns, he returns punts, but true ball winner. Like his ball skills are really good. He was my receiver 1 this summer. I've kind of like faded a little way, but he's to me a clear top 15, top 20 guy. I think he's awesome. Most have him more of like in the 20s, but he's looking like he's gonna be a first round pick. I want the Patriots or the Bills to draft him so badly. Jordan Tyson has been more or less the consensus receiver 1 from Arizona State. Very dynamic, great ball skills. One of those kind of undersized guys that knows how to contort. Kind of like Kadarius Toney without being a nutcase. as far as kind of like twitchiness, as far as like how his ball skills are and how he's able to adjust for stuff like that. He's a little bigger than that, maybe not body type wise, but as far as movement and everything. Cool player. Has injury concerns is maybe his biggest blemish. Mekhi Lemon, really cool player. Has some JSN to his game. I feel like you're going to really like him. I think you're going to like Lemon a lot. Yeah, that's if I had maybe Tyson. Maybe Tyson you might actually really like. I'm just trying to hedge. I think Tyson you might really like.
Tyson's,
I think you'll really like
Tyson
him.
Sounded a little bit like Garrett Wilson-esque. If you're saying like bendy,
that's
flexible,
a better one.
Like
yes.
but not Kadarius Toney like that. That helps.
I like Tyson better than I liked Wilson coming out. He's got some cool ball skills. Yeah. He's got some cool ball skills and stuff. And just you'll see. it's fun. Chris Bell, if you're optimistic, he's AJ Brown Jr. If you're pessimistic, he's Treylon Burks. He just tore his ACL. He is a freak, though. He literally catches everything. He's like Pat Bryant in that sense, where he just crushes the ball and can take anything to the house. And he's gigantic. Terrible route runner. I would say terrible. A raw route runner. Gotten better, but just one of these those types. You know, he's better than like Leggett, but he's kind of like that. He's this year's that guy. Chris Brazell, Tennessee. Big athlete, fast. Tennessee. Do I need to say any more? But actually, he's pretty good, though. I like him. But yeah, okay. I consider him more of a day two guy right now, but I like him. And then Bryce Lance is Trey Lance's brother, and he's pretty dang good and a fun North Dakota State offense. Yeah, got some good size, good ball skills as well. I'm maybe a little higher on him than maybe others, but I think most of us have him as a day two guy. It's a fun class. A lot of flavors. A lot of flavors.
I mean, I was going to say that sounded like the full Baskin-Robbins, like, ice cream bar right there. So that's I'm excited to check out all that. That's always my favorite part about the wide receiver classes. Is like, what do you need? Real quick on tight ends, who do we need to note here?
Kenyon Sadiq from Oregon, consensus top 20 guy. I have had him in the top 10. I think he is excellent. And Dane, we're in agreement on it that Brock Bowers is hard to say anybody's at that tier, but maybe like 10% below that. Maybe even like 5% below Brock Bowers, like as far as an athlete, as far as yak skills. Yeah, he's really dynamic. I think he's an excellent player. I'm really excited to see him as a pro because also he's willing to scrap as a blocker. So you don't have to hide him. He's not the biggest guy. He's 240 and change, but he is just a really dynamic player, really good with the ball in his hands, like just so explosive. He's an easy top 20 guy at the tight end position. And I think can actually, split out and do the things that you want a guy to do if you're taking a tight end high. Max Clair, more of a day two guy, but still a good tight end. Kind of by consensus, tight end three, tight end four in this class. It's a good tight end class. There's a lot of good day two guys, but I think Sadiq is just the clear blue number one true blue chip. There's a lot more kind of like green chip guys, more day two guys. But yeah, Sadiq is very dynamic, fun player.
Love it. As I said, I was just going to sit back and let Nate roll on this one because I don't know. I don't know any of that.
Rough draft of these takes. I can't wait to repeat these for the next 3 months as I go show to show.
You can just find new ways to say the same thing over and over again. That's what draft season is all about, baby. And you'll find some fresh ways to do it. I have complete faith in you. So there we've done something for everybody on this show. We previewed, fantasy football semi playoff matchups for the people who are still playing, the 97.3% of people who listen to the show who are guaranteed to make it to their fantasy football semis, and then the rest of the folks who are thinking about their dynasty rookie drafts. We helped everybody out here. We're going to take another quick break, and then we're going to continue to talk week 16 because we got a big Thursday night football game to preview. Rams, Seahawks, we're going to get into that right after this. All right, we're back. Big Thursday night football preview here. Rams at Seahawks. We've obviously seen these teams play before. The Seahawks are a 1.5-point home favorite. We got a 42-point total here. We've got some maybe powerful wins pregame and through the kickoff, according to Kevin Roth here. That's obviously something we need to know here. It could be an interesting weather game up there in Seattle. Nevertheless, either way, big game here, Nate. Let's talk about first when the Seahawks have the ball. Have you been spooked by the way Sam Darnold has been playing of late? Because I don't know that he's looked. I mean, like what I said, he's like, think? Oh no, old Sam. Yeah, I don't know. Well, I'm asking you. I'm asking the peasant is asking the oligarch. Have you been a little spooked by how Sam Darnold has played of late?
When I first watched it on TV, I was, and then I watched it on All 22 today, the Colts game, and I was like, absolutely not. I actually thought he played great against the Colts. One of those where you have to see the routes. Where a lot of those on TV copy, it looked panicky. And then when I watched it on film, it was like, actually, no, it was good pocket movement. He was creating some throws, a lot of stuff underneath. I thought he was super, the last three drives especially, he had some incredible throws, like truly, really, really good throws. So I feel a little bit better than I did. Even with the O-line, I feel a little bit better than I did after that game with field goal after field goal after field goal. The run game is still very
stinks.
It's gotten to they just have to get to 40% rushing success rate, I always say, to be like a true contender in my eyes. and they're at 39.3. So they're almost there. So it's but the passing game, just week after week, they really haven't had too many games where they just totally blow up. Even in the game against the Rams, they were still able to move the ball. It was just the turnovers, which obviously you can say like, oh, yeah, just don't turn the ball over. So that's the always the thing that you have to worry with the Darnold game. But I will say that this we're starting with the Seahawks side of the ball, so I won't get to the other side yet. But I will say is that these are the two best teams to me. Even I know there's been some talk with, you know, Darnold dropping off, the O-line dropping off. The run game isn't all there, but they are still a good offense. Like, the offensive system is still good. They have a defense that can keep them in game scripts, that you don't have to drop it back too often. But the thing is, I'm watching when they drop back with no play action, and Darnold's still able to perform. Again, he's not going to be a guy that dink and dunks. But as far as generating explosives, that can still happen in this offense. So that keeps them so viable to me. The Rams are clearly the best team in the NFL. No one's even close to them. But I do think that the Seahawks are one of the best tier two non-Rams teams, if you want to put it that way. I would say 2, 3, or 4 in some way, shape, or form when I look at contenders. So yeah, I not only just like have I dropped off on Darnold, but really I'm still kind of staying strong with the Seahawks. They on rewatch, I feel a lot better about them than I do when I'm watching them on TV. And maybe I was watching a little too much Philip Rivers in that last game. That might be part of it as well. That was catching my eye a little bit.
Totally fair. He's hard to miss. I think when you're looking at the Seahawks like passing game too, Rashid Shaheed ran more routes in Cooper Kupp than for the first time all year. And I think that's going to be an important element in this game. I mean, I obviously from a fantasy standpoint, he's a deep, deep play. I think the Darnold Shaheed, like, their connection is still kind of evolving. I mean, yeah. I think like when you watch Shaheed in isolation, I think you can see why Kubiak wanted him, why the team wants him. You know, he instantly just knows what he's doing in the offense. But him, like Darnold and JSN just had that like instant chemistry. I don't think that's quite happened with Shaheed and Darnold just yet. And obviously Shaheed and JSN are very, very different receivers, but he had a lot of success, not in the first matchup. He was still obviously week 11, but Shaheed went against the Rams defense when he was at the Saints, that was one of his better games. And I think like getting him loose on the secondary that can be vulnerable would be a big thing for them in this game. If that connection can continue to evolve, that obviously I think would help out the offense a ton, because I do think that the Seahawks offense can have some success against this defense. Obviously it's just all about, can you block it up and can you exploit those holes that are going to be there in the secondary?
It was the most explosive offense we had seen since in the new millennium for the first chunk of the season. It's tapered off a little. It's still been explosive. They had 6 explosive passes last week, and they could have had more. There's 2 drops. But going against this Rams defense, teams have shown that if you attack Emmanuel Forbes over and over, you can get him. And if you attack him vertically, I already brought up the Jameson Williams thing. You can get him when you catch him these certain quarters looks. You can attack him vertically because their safeties like to sniff downwards. They're very smart safeties, and they like to make plays downwards. They like to keep their eyes down. So you can attack them deep if you're willing to push it and can protect. That's always the big thing. But that's where Shaheed, in theory, can come alive because, okay, maybe there's a post route available. Maybe there's some deep ball available for him to get. And JSN's been viable on those as well this year too. So can work in conjunction with each other.
What about when the Rams have the ball going against the Seahawks defense, which still has been quite good?
I also meant to mention Rams defense also susceptible to quarterback design runs. And Sam Darnold has been used on those quite much, but maybe this is the type of game to kind of throw those in. They've allowed the highest yards per carry on QB design runs this year. So just one of those things I also wanted to throw in there. But other side of the ball, this is good on good. This is the defense, the only defense, like the Rams offense is entering all-time, stratosphere, like as far as they are almost deserving of a name, greatest show on turf too. Like they're getting to that point. But the only defense to slow them out this year consistently was the Seahawks defense. That was, and really the big plays in that game came in a lot of, especially run game wise, came on designer plays like short yardage, stuff that's more game planning, not in it was the opening script and then short yardage. It wasn't the true flow of the run game like they usually kind of get stuff where it's like there's another 2nd and 6 run going for a big yardage. That got stifled throughout the game. So kind of more boom busty than they've been typically used to. And I think that's going to continue in this game where, they're going to get theirs. So it's the Rams offense, but it's going to be more of like, Like, there's going to be some three and outs more than they're used to. This is the two of the best teams. And I think it's just going to be a continued performance. And it's in Seattle as well. That's the other thing. And there's rain and everything. Just going to be a little bit uglier. I do think that they use a lot of tight ends as well. Davante Adams has the banged up hamstring. Also, yeah, that's what they like to use anyway. So it might be a Colby Parkinson week.
Oh, yeah. I think I've picked up Colby Parkinson in one of my leagues, and I'm probably just going to instantly drop him into the starting lineup here because
Mike Gesicki didn't work out.
No, that team got eliminated last week. Not all Mike Gesicki's fault, but this is a different team. I might be playing him over Jake Ferguson. I like Jake Ferguson, but he's just been kind of lately. But I might play Colby Parkinson over Jake Ferguson and like go for that. I know you mentioned all the stats earlier about like the tight ends. Coverage. So that did have me second guessing it, but I do think that Colby Parkinson, you mentioned some of the, they're going to throw a lot of tight ends out there. Now, Seattle is the one team that has actually like made the efficiency print fest that has been 13 personnel for this Rams offense kind of slow down. But still, Parkinson caught a touchdown in that game. And he's just been like the guy, the do everything tight end in 13 personnel, because Ferguson is kind of that field stretcher. Davis Allen is more of a pure blocker, whereas Parkinson can do a little bit of both. Since week 12, the first game without Tyler Higbee, he actually leads all of the pass catchers in snap rate on this team. It's 72%. He's third in route participation, and he's caught four touchdowns in that span, including two last week. So I think that Parkinson is a viable tight end streamer in this matchup. And if you just look at obviously the Seahawks are great as a defense overall, but if you look at them from a fantasy standpoint, they're third against quarterbacks from a schedule adjusted standpoint. 4-for-4 has got a great metric for this. They're third against quarterbacks, first against running backs, first against wide receivers. They're 18th against tight ends. So it's like, usually you see this with these great defenses. If they're going to give you something, it's going to be that tight end, you know, stuff underneath. And that's where that production kind of comes from.
Yep. It's just because they want to take away strength. Usually if they focus on a lot of tight ends, they're making you matriculate down the field. They're making you just be slow and be steady down the field, as opposed to letting you get the boom bust plays that offenses want to get to on the outside.
Anything else from this game, Nate, before we let you go to deal with your real life game prediction, any other player to watch, anything else from this game before we let you go?
This game, I'm kind of bummed I can't like do my deep dive, true deep dive in this game, because it truly might be a game of the year type of candidate. I want to see what Davante Adams, when he comes back, like what I think that's what the Rams have done this year, is they've given themselves ways to pivot when guys like Adams or Puka Nacua get hurt. So I just really am excited, just more as a real football sense in this. I predict actually the Seahawks win, but I do think that the Rams are the best team in the NFL still. So it's not indicative of anything else. I just think that just how this game flow goes, I think the Seahawks might be a little more geeked up for it. But I will just say, over our big point is that the Seahawks haven't had as much of a drop off as you think. The review of them on offense is that this is kind of their formula. The run game is not going to be great. It's going to be frustrating at times. But man, the passing game is still some good stuff. And I still think Darnold's playing a little bit better than you would think. I was surprised too on rewatch.
Really excited to watch this game. Really excited to recap it. And Nate, unfortunately, we say goodbye to you here. We say goodbye to you for the rest of the regular season, but you will be on the show soon. And if people need their fill of Nate Tice, make sure you go and subscribe to Football 301. I'll be on that show. He'll be on this show. The whole deal. You know how it's done here. We're going to take our final break on the show. When we come back, Joel Smith joins us for this week's edition of Buzz is Building. We're going to get into that right after this. All right, welcome to Buzz is Building with Joel Smith. Every Wednesday, Joel joins us for the last block of the show to provide five players with buzz that you need to keep an eye on heading into every single week. We got week 16. It's the playoffs. It's the semifinals. Joel, what's going on, buddy? How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you? Round two of the playoffs. So five matchups to talk about today.
All right, perfect. Let's dive right into this, man. A few of these players I have on my teams and I am curious about, so good. I'm going to hopefully benefit from your analysis as much as everybody else here. Let's get it started with a big name, Ja'Marr Chase. What do we got on him?
Yeah, Chase, maybe Higgins, if he comes back, it can count for both of them, but hoping for that big bounce back this week. Four different numbers when we're looking at the matchup against the Miami Dolphins, because if you just look at the normal matchup, it says they're ninth against receivers this year. But if we adjust to the schedule, that ninth becomes 15th. If we go to the recent games, the last five, they're 21st. And then this last one would just be their EPA per dropback in terms of a true passing defense. They're 25th. So when we're looking like, yeah, they're ninth against receivers, technically, I would say 15th when we're actually taking the skill into account. But there's a lot of reasons for that that don't really fit the Bengals with this game script, the volume that they should have, and just how their offense works.
So I think one interesting part of all that to come, because people will play Chase, obviously you'll play Higgins if he's there. Joe Burrow, you're launching him right back up to like top four quarterback status in this matchup against the Dolphins here too.
I wouldn't say top four. I would have a little more nerves because like last week, Burrow did horrible and Chase still had 23 points. So I think it's a little easier to have more confidence in Chase than in Burrow just because he has to have like a great passing day to be good in fantasy. So I still have more trust. He's still quarterback one for me this week, but a little more confidence in Chase. Like the big thing for me, like Miami, they're 15th against receivers adjusted to that schedule, but they're 27th in passing attempts against them this year. So it's not like they have much like passing volume against them. So in this game where the Bengals defense can help them out, you're expecting, even with Quinn Ewers, honestly, in my opinion, it should be a closer game. Cincinnati, top five passing team in terms of that volume. So hopefully that volume is there where it's more of a per play game compared to, oh, the Dolphins are just losing by a bunch.
All right, let's get to your next player here, Bucky Irving, Tampa Bay Buccaneers running back. And I'm a little nervous about what you have to say about Bucky, but I'm hoping you make me feel a little bit better because I have him in a semifinal matchup that I would very much like to win.
Yeah, I'm trying to make myself feel better here, I'm honest. But we're looking at Bucky Irving. There's one big issue, but it doesn't ruin everything. That big issue is just the goal line carries. He got basically every single touch for the Bucs last year in the first 95 yards of the field. But those last five, the three goal line attempts, went to Tucker. It's not the end of the world. It's obviously not good. But he doesn't have a goal line touchdown the entire year, and he's still averaging 16 points per game. So still like that bell cow guy for the most part. He's still going to be overall solid in fantasy. And the Panthers, really bad in the second half of the year. And if we just look at the history, however much you believe in that, he has 24 games played in his career. His top two games in scrimmage yards, 190 yards versus Carolina last year. His second best, 185 yards versus Carolina in his second game last year.
That obviously is, I'm hoping, big. Derek Brown obviously didn't play for the Panthers last year. So that's that's a big part of it. Derek Brown's been awesome for the Panthers this year. But still, the thing that makes me nervous, Joel, is not just the goal line thing for Bucky. It's also the fact that he still ran some routes, did Bucky Irving, but Rashad White ran more, 17 to 15. And it just really stinks as a fantasy back if you're in kind of that between the 20s role, right? Where you're not getting passing down stuff, and then you're not getting stuff when we're talking about deep into the red zone, like around the goal line. That really does. Like, you can't be a fantasy running back one if you have that role. There's not much you can do about that at this point. If you're like me and you have Bucky Irving on a fantasy team and you're in the semifinal matchup, like, you're playing Bucky Irving, but it just makes it a little tougher if we're looking for him to be that top 10 player at the position.
Yeah, totally. He's still got a little more targets than Rashad White last week, so I'm hoping they deliberately use him when he is on the field for those passing down roles, but it does make him more of a matchup play. So like Carolina, they're bottom four in the rushing points per game allowed the second half of the year. They've went off a cliff in terms of their rushing defense. So you're hoping that sticks around for Bucky Irving this week and he can get enough in his volume. Maybe he gets a touchdown from like the 10-yard line. That's what you're hoping for in general, but not that top five guy that I would want, but definitely playable this week.
Guy who was the top five back last week. We'll see what he can do this week. Tyrann Tracy, Giants running back. What do you have on him?
Yeah. The main thing here is just the Vikings defense in terms of where they're being exploited against as running backs. They're one of the best teams against receiving running backs this year. That's why when we're looking at their matchups, they don't allow as many points to running backs. Tracy, as a former receiver, doesn't get much receiving. Like three targets a game is about what he's at right now. Not getting too much, but they are 22nd on the ground. And it does give him a little bit more hope recently. They've allowed a touchdown to a running back on the ground in seven of their last eight games. So you're hoping that he can get in the end zone on the ground like basically every other running back has in the second half of the year. And if we take out just those two blowout games where they won by 30 points, one a couple weeks ago, one against the Bengals with Jake Browning, they allow 20 rushing points per game. So if this is a closer game, you would expect Tracy to have a decent day on the ground.
Any concerns that he also did not have a goal line role? I was Devin Singletary that kind of came in when they were close to the end zone. Any concern with Tracy, or is he still like a green light play for you this week?
It's a little, it was, yeah, Singletary did come in for that one carry. The big difference for me was that Tracy just like finally had the majority. He was averaging just over 50% of the touches entering the week ever since Scatterby went down. And then he had a season high 75%. So hopefully it's enough there to kind of put him over the top and maybe he doesn't get unlucky and they get down to the 3-yard line and put move in Singletary for him.
Yeah, that would be great. I think Tyrann Tracy obviously looked great matchup last week, but this is still you playing the notes you brought here, wrote about him a little bit today. Still definitely a good spot here against this Vikings defense. Let's go to your next player here, Juwan Jennings, 49ers wide receiver.
Mm-hmm. It's a true ceiling for him. I feel like it's one of those guys where, yes, you're not fully confident playing, but we've seen it multiple times throughout the past couple of years, especially with Purdy in there. And the injuries are a big factor here. You obviously still don't have Sauce Gardner for the Colts. They don't have Travarius Ward. Put him on IR. If Pearsall does miss that game, that's where he becomes really interesting. There are 4 teams above San Francisco in terms of the receiving points per game this season. It's Detroit, Arizona, the Rams, and Dallas. And all 4 of those teams this year, we've seen guys be incredible when one guy goes down. Marvin Harrison goes down. CeeDee Lamb goes down. Adams, we're kind of hoping for Puka, like that's what we expect. That sort of thing. If Pearsall's down and they kind of go back to him being that clear wide receiver one, that's where it gets really interesting for me.
Yeah. It's a really great spot too. The Colts matchup is obviously good against that secondary, and man, my guy Pearsall just can't.
I know
avoid the freaking injuries. It's so annoying. Right as he's he gets hurt at the beginning of that game. And I'm like, oh man, all right, forget it. This was supposed to be the spot for him against a bad Titans secondary. He comes back, he plays really well, finishes the game with an injury on like a freaking hip drop tackle. I thought we were trying to get those out of the game, Joel. I thought that was a point of emphasis this year, and it has to happen to poor Ricky Pearsall. So, I mean, yeah, obviously, to your point, that makes Juwan Jennings a really good play this week.
Yeah, we look at like last year, there was 2 games where he played without Deebo Samuel. I would say like the equivalent, you know, of that second receiver. He had 22 targets, 60 fantasy points. So he's definitely, that ceiling is clearly there against a secondary that is pretty banged up and wasn't doing too well before anyways.
I'm just going to throw like range-wise rankings for Juwan Jennings, because we talked about a lot of guys in this earlier segment with Nate on the show, you know, kind of receivers like Jalen Waddle, Jameson Williams, mm-hmm. George Pickens, Terry McLaurin, Ladd McConkey, these kind of like volatile guys who, you know, they're in trickier spots to figure out this week, some because of their team, some is because of the matchups. But like, does Jennings maybe project better than some of those guys to you in this matchup if there's no Pearsall?
A couple, yeah. If there's no Pearsall, I would have him right around like wide receiver 15 or wide receiver 16, like next to Ted McMillan, for example. So Jameson Williams and him, you said, I would have him a decent bit higher still. Terry McLaurin, I would have way lower than Jennings personally, just because of the matchup.
Yep, that makes complete sense to me. That's how I would view it as well. Okay, last name here, and this is a deep pull. Talk to you about Audric Estime, Saints running back.
Yeah, we're touchdown hunting. We're touchdown hunting. Sometimes when it gets to the fantasy playoffs, you got to be a little bit risky if you need it. And it can happen. I don't think it's too crazy. We look at last year, RB6, Tajay Spears in the fantasy playoffs. Amir Abdullah was the RB11. Gus Edwards, Jarendo are both RB2s in the fantasy playoffs. It just happens this time. It's a couple game stretches. So we get a Saints team. They have the best matchup you can possibly have. This Jets defense has allowed 14 touchdowns to running backs in the last 5 games. Basically 3 touchdowns to running backs per game. So I think it's a really good spot where if we're touchdown hunting, he can get that goal line work, unlike a couple of the guys we talked about earlier. The Saints are home and favorites, which is rare in terms of being a favorite for them. So their implied total for this game is 22.5. They've only hit that 2 times this year. So should be one of their better days on offense. I think he can get into the end zone here.
I think outside of like really deep leagues, playing Estime is probably a little too cute, but if you're in one of those formats, I think what Joel threw out there makes a ton of sense. And I will say, to put a personal note on that, I talk about the Kings Classic leagues on the show a lot. We draft them in person at the expo. I used to talk about it with Andy a lot when he was on the show, because the waiver wire is just so cursed. It's like a 14 teamer. You start a bajillion players. There's never anybody good available. The best pickup off the waiver wire this year has been like Bam Knight on my salary cap team that has somehow made it to the semifinals, even though I went super studs and duds. So like, yeah, I've been starting Bam Knight for weeks and weeks and weeks, and now he's gone. So I picked up Estime today after the Devin Neal news. So Joel, like, I actually need this to happen.
Yeah,
it's so gross, but like, I you say we're touchdown hunting. Yeah, your boy is wreaking touchdown hunting with Audric Estime. So I love that you highlighted this.
Yeah, like they play fast. They have a fun offense, probably a little better than you'd expect. Shuck's been solid. Brady Cook's on the other side. They just fired their defensive coordinator. Like, I feel like there's so many signs where it's like there's a lot going in his favor, at least. I have some hope. I have some hope.
All right, Joel, tell the people about all the content you got coming up this week that can help them in the fantasy semifinals.
Cool. Main thing was matchup lies. So we have YouTube matchup lies videos for Tuesday, breaking down the context, injuries, the schedules, all that sort of stuff. Thursday, we'll have another matchup video, fast facts on Friday, a couple other videos coming out before that, article or two, that sort of stuff.
No excuses. Check out all the content, especially the lie one. That is going to be a great one for you guys. I saw Joel hyping it up on social media earlier today. Make sure you check that one out. That is going to do it for us on today's show. Thanks again to Toyota, the official automotive partner of the NFL, who's all in all season. And don't forget to check out Toyota's game day giveaways for your chance to win. We'll be back tomorrow. Justin Boone previews week 16 with me live at 5 p.m. Eastern right here on YouTube. Until then, we are out.